baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
Wire and another one. My goodness.
So the dark days are upon us, buddy.
It is the middle of a lockout, officially.
Yeah, day two here, buddy. I have been dreading this moment, and now that we're in it, it feels darker than I had anticipated. I don't know. Like, you're watching all the posturing and all the stuff going on between the MLB and the MLBPA, and all the avatars with the faces are gone. Baseball players don't exist anymore. Right. Like, man, I don't know how you're feeling about it, but what's really frustrating to me is I just truly see this as they're not even going to talk till February. They're just going to sling mud. They're going to have a few meetings in December for public display. They're going to shut things down in January and not even go back to the tables till February. That's my prediction. Where are you at? Like, are you...
Well, I feel like dark days, but I also, this has felt inevitable to me. Like,
yeah,
we've had Greg Zahn on the show a couple times, and all season last year during the 60 game sham, as he calls it, he was very adamant that this lockout was coming and how far apart the two sides were, and that they shouldn't even have played last season, the 60 game COVID season, because they should just focus on working their stuff out. So that's been kind of wrinkling the back of my brain for the last year and a half, two years.
Yeah.
So this has just felt inevitable. I feel like a loss of games is inevitable, not to be a negative Nancy about it. But yeah, I don't feel like anything is going to be accomplished over the next month for sure. Probably nothing in January. They might schedule a meeting or two. Nothing will come of it. And yeah, I watched a piece with Jeff Passan, and he said there's no real urgency. Like, there's no reason to panic until, you know, the middle towards the end of February. And I don't know if we're even going to get the ball rolling until the middle or end of February.
I just have zero faith in MLB to pull this off in a timely fashion after watching how little pressure they had on them to pull off the 2020 season, and how that absolutely could have been a 90-game season or 110-game season, and they bickered over things that weren't even in the CBA until it was a 60-game season, which is also a proof of concept that they can do a 60-game season. I don't know. I don't have a ton of hope. Obviously, we have a pile to unpack when it comes to the lockout, and we will get to that later in the show. We'll go over where we're at for the Blue Jays, what they've done, kind of recap that, and where they need to go from here. We'll also talk a little bit of Marcus Stroman in the next 40 minutes or so.
Oh, good. I was hoping we'd bring up Marcus Stroman.
Right? And his journalistic integrity. You know, he's breaking stories now. Anyways, we'll get to that. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. Welcome, everybody, to the walk-off. Thank you so much for taking the time to click and view us on YouTube, or to continue to listen on whatever platform you listen to the podcast on. We truly appreciate it. Just want to, while we're talking the podcast, I did wish to bring up that November, so just last month, is the biggest month that we have ever had here on the walk-off when it comes to views, and not by a little. So we would like to thank everyone who has taken the time and become part of the walk-off community. I know we've had probably close to 50 people join the Discord in the last month.
That's awesome.
Literally doubling where we were. We had 21,000 views in November on YouTube. Just to put that in perspective, we've had 80,000 views in total since this thing has started. Yeah. So again,
pretty incredible.
Blown away, super appreciative. Thank you so much. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Adam runs the TikTok, and we both, as always, ignore the Facebook. So.
Absolutely. So yeah, we're at just about 2,600 subscribers now. So 2,500 was a huge milestone that we hit in November. And now the push is on for 3,000, which in baseball terms is a big number, right? 3,000 yeah. hits is a big number. So let's push hard. If you haven't subscribed and you're here and you're hanging out, welcome. Hit the subscribe button. Tell a friend who likes the Blue Jays and hates the Yankees, and let's get that number closer to 3. So,
all right, let's get into it. I do wish to recap where we're at for the Blue Jays. Right-handed pitcher Kevin Gausman, obviously the big target. I would say that this is who Atkins and Shapiro were after from day one. I get the feeling that they knew Ray was probably not the guy that they were going to go for very early on. Just how quickly they got the Gausman deal done, how quickly it seemed like they pivoted from Ray. And even the way Robbie was talking about things when he appeared on Tim and Friends and just Sportsnet. I mean, obviously it's tough to read a guy in free agency anyways. Their agents are mm-hmm. always like, shut your mouth, we're trying to get money here. Don't burn any bridges. But, yeah. you know, it just felt like Robbie was probably headed elsewhere, and that kind of turned out to be the case here. Kevin Gausman making friends in Toronto, though. You know, he brought up, of course, that his MLB debut was at the Rogers Center, and he made a comment something along the lines of, I'd like to finish my career where I started it, which is a very cool thing to hear a guy say. Now, of course, $110 million is pretty convincing. He did get 5 years, which is a big deal for a pitcher. You don't see a lot of pitchers get 5 years. I mean, there are a few exceptions to that in like Garrett Cole, and I mean Robbie Ray got 5 with an opt out. But for the most part, I mean Marcus Stroman signed for 3 years with the Cubs, and he was one of the top pitchers on the market, 30 yeah. years old, so he couldn't even get 5 years. Gausman did very, very well for himself.
Well, I mean, as much as we see the odd Max Scherzer and, you know, Justin Verlander until recently with his injury struggles, but we don't see a lot of guys continue to be dominant into the later half of their 30s, right? So
no. And it does happen, but it's a risk when it comes to the organization, right?
Big time.
Kind of cool to watch Rogers go out there and spend big on a frontline starter. Hopefully, Gausman can continue to develop into the ace that he's flirting with, right? You can just tell the last couple years that Gausman's right on the verge of something special. And if he's not, then he's a great number two. Either way, big, big get for the Toronto Blue Jays. Nice. And I know if you haven't seen much of Gausman, I mean, he has spent the last couple years in the National League. If you go on YouTube and just type in Gausman splitter, oh, that's a rabbit hole that's fun for any Jays fan to go down, because it is nasty. And he's known as one of the best splitters in all of baseball. And you start watching those those video compilations of it, and it's pretty exciting stuff. I did wish. Oh, and one last thing while we're talking Gausman, I did wish to bring up, he's going to be wearing number 34 in Toronto as a tip of the hat, if you will, to Roy Halladay. Obviously, he can't wear number 32 because that has already been retired and is up on the wall of excellence in Toronto. However, Halladay did, of course, wear number 34 when he played with the Phillies. So kind of a tip of a hat to Roy. I know you're not sure if you like that or not, but...
Well, I mean, it's a little bit... I don't know how I feel. I mean, he wore 34 with the Giants, so...
Yeah.
It's not like he's making, like, 34 is just his number. He's coming in and it happens to, like, I think it's just a coincidence that, you know, maybe it's just a common pitcher number. Halladay wore it in San Francisco, and it's just like, oh, this is an opportunity to get some extra fan points.
Yes.
I don't know. Halladay, it's also...
Halladay wore it in Philly, and in Philly. Gausman wore it in San Fran, just so we're not getting comments in the YouTube here. Adam knows what he's talking about. It was a slip there.
What did I say?
Halladay and San Fran, but that's fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Crisis averted, everybody.
I'm flustered and I'm only like half a cup of coffee in this morning. So, no, I don't know.
One thing I did wish to delve in here on Gausman is a lot of Blue Jays fans saw the Robbie Ray deal in Seattle, 5 years, $115 million with an opt-out in year three. And they're like, so for $5 million, we let Robbie Ray walk. And yeah, that is kind of what happened. A little bit to unpack with this. I think Kevin Gausman's been a target of this Toronto Blue Jays organization for years now. They were sniffing around 4 years ago. They were sniffing around 2 years ago. And then again last year, they actually made him a multi-year deal. He wound up taking the qualifying offer and going back to the Giants. This is a guy Pete Walker has viewed as a top end of the rotation guy. And I can't wait to see what Walker does when he gets there. I'm not saying Pete Walker is necessarily the pitcher whisperer, but for a guy to watch a guy from a distance for that long and try to entice them to come over to the Jays for that long, there's something there. I did wish to also bring up the fact that Robbie Ray had a compensation draft pick attached to him.
Right.
And I think it's the second round, so it's a higher-end draft pick.
Yep.
There is something to be said for that, obviously. So if you're just going to look at... So if you're the Toronto Blue Jays organization and you truly believe Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman are pretty much interchangeable, but you get a pick if you take Gausman, then it makes sense. And I think that that is something that possibly is why what tipped the scales. Another thing I've heard... And listen, before I say this, I just wish to bring up... We... Here on the walk-off, Adam and I actually were quite upset with a few fellow podcasts who brought up Joel Piamps and the fact that he was unvaccinated, and that was one of the reasons why he was put on waivers by the Blue Jays
right
mid-season 2021. And then he actually – it caused such a stir that Piamps actually felt the need to take a picture of his vaccination card and put it online, which is really frustrating and such BS. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm about to be a little bit of a hypocrite here.
Okay.
There are rumors out there that Robbie Ray is unvaccinated. And the Canadian government did just come out in November and make a statement saying that as of January 15th, professional athletes no longer get an exemption to be in the country unvaccinated, where they can just get a test and continue to live their life normally. So now it's a big deal for the Toronto Blue Jays to make sure that the players that they're bringing in, that they're spending major money on, if you're going to spend $110, $115 million on somebody, that they're not going to have a big bump in the road that first year or so, or however right. long this freaking pandemic drags out for. It's just hurdles they don't wish to deal with. And if that's the case, then maybe that makes a lot of sense as to why they lean towards Gausman. If Ray is vaccinated, then our sincere apologies. This is all hearsay and Twitter rhetoric. But if that is the case, it does make sense as to why they lean towards Gausman.
My stance is adamantly in the no comment section, so...
Right. But, yeah, of course. Yeah. And it's not even fair to bring up, but it is rhetoric that's out there. So again,
it's worth addressing. What's been your biggest surprise in the off season leading up to December 1st? Been the Texas Rangers?
I would say how many signings there were and how much money these shortstops have gotten. Yeah.
So how much money? Let's get into this, because this has been a huge offseason. How much total dollars was handed out in November?
I think it was $1.9 billion.
Isn't that absurd?
It broke records.
To like two dozen guys.
Yeah. Literally. There's like half a dozen guys are carrying like 1.5 billion of that, pretty much.
Yeah, there was 5 9-figure contracts handed out. Figures. That's 100 million plus.
I mean, Corey Seager's third of a $1 billion contract is insane. it's so big, and I really can't wrap my head around him getting that much. And I really like Corey Seager, big lefty bat, guy who's great at shortstop, has put up numbers his whole career, has been very injury prone. I just was kind of envisioning, and we talked about this on the mailbag, I envisioned Carlos Correa getting that $325 million and then everyone falling in underneath of him. Whereas now it looks like if Correa gets signed, it's going to be for over $400 million.
He had to have been thrilled with that Corey Seager.
Oh, just signing. Doing the wink and gun to the Rangers. Hey,
yeah.
Good word. I mean, even Marcus Simeon's contract of $175 million over 7 years is major, major stuff. I mean, the Texas Rangers themselves dished out between the $325 million to Seager and the $175 million to Simeon. $500 million. That's between two players. $500 million. And this is one thing I think we really do need to keep in mind as this lockout proceeds, because there is a lot of people talking that this is millionaires versus billionaires. And on some stances, that's obviously the case. But listen to what we just talked about with free agency. So $1.9 billion have been spent. $500 million of that is on two players. Total, it's all distributed through like 12 to 15 players. We need to actually, you know, like it is a minuscule amount. Keep in mind, there are obviously over 1,200 players in Major League Baseball. Every team has a 40-man roster, and every year you watch guys going up and down on that roster. So for every Max Scherzer who's out there making more than the Pittsburgh Pirates in a season, yeah, there's everyone playing on the Pittsburgh Pirates, right? Like,
oh, that's a great take, Scott.
It's just, listen, I'm siding with the players. I always have sided with the players. I watch baseball to watch the players. I'm not in it to see Billy Bean do his magic money ball. Listen, I think
that's what the movies and the books are for, right?
Yeah, that's right. Like, there's something to be said for the analytics and the front offices and the inner workings of baseball. And obviously, we here on the Walk-Off find it very interesting. We talk it all the time. However, I'm not watching baseball to see how the Rays can penny pinch and use their bullpen. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So there are problems in baseball, and I think this is one thing that is overlooked at times, is that there is there's a lot of poverty when it comes to the teams, right? And I don't mean actual poverty. I just mean like there are poor, to quote Moneyball, there are rich teams and there are poor teams, and then there's the Oakland A's, right? Like,
So
a floor in the new CBA, something that we could see, which would help everything out, right? I don't know. Like, I'm kind of rambling on here, but I just do wish to bring up for every Marcus Simeon that gets signed, there's 20 Kirby Sneeds, right?
So. Yeah. I was listening to the Nothing Personal with David Sampson podcast this morning, and he brought up the fact that, which, by the way, great podcast. He's the former president of the Miami Marlins, last time they won the World Series. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he's great, like, for anybody that wants to know more, like, business details inside the baseball and what's going on. He pointed out the fact this morning that, like, MLB has a revenue-sharing agreement in place, right? So teams like the Cleveland Guardians and the Miami Marlins and stuff, they receive a portion of the profits from teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers. And in the previous CBA, stipulation is that that revenue share is required to be spent on improving the product, like improving their baseball product on the field, right? Which I guess was intended to mean you have to spend that on your payroll. They have not been doing that. They have been spending that money on like ballpark improvements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
which is just like a huge, what do you call it, legal loophole that was left open. Mm-hmm. When a team like the Cleveland Guardians can get $42 million in revenue sharing from the Yankees and only spend $29 million on their players. Entire player salary, and then just justify it as, yeah, but we spent this much on upgrading the ballpark and improving the infrastructure and blah, 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 right? Like, that is not, I think, what the players would like to see. So I think like a salary cap with a ceiling as well as a floor, right, would be the biggest mm-hmm. thing that would benefit all the players, right?
And to go back to the shortstop market, I think this is one of the reasons we haven't seen Carlos Correa sign yet, is that there is a possibility of that luxury tax ceiling being raised. So big currently time. It's, I think it's sitting at 207 or something around there.
Yeah.
So if it pushes up to 240, that really does open up guys like, or organizations like the Dodgers and the Giants and the Yankees and even the Mets. And I mean, obviously the Mets aren't going to be in on Correa, but I'm just bringing up big market teams that all of a sudden can spend more. Even the Jays would be in that sort of realm, right? If the luxury tax goes up that much, maybe all of a sudden the Jays spending $200 million is something Rodgers would consider. When it comes to Correa, I think that we saw it coming, him waiting until after the new CBA was in place. In fact, I didn't even see this many guys signing this many big deals until the CBA was negotiated.
I'm shocked,
too. It kind of surprised me to watch guys like Simeon and Seager score such massive deals. Good on them.
I think there's been a lot of talk, too, about how frustrated Yankees fans have been and that they were pretty much left behind during November.
Which I love.
Which we all have to love. It should just be pointed out that the Yankees have no room under the luxury tax to go out and spend. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they are one of three teams who... The Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Mets now. Mets are way over. But the Yankees have massive contracts already on the books. Gerrit Cole, $36 million a year for the next, I think, 5 years left on that deal. Mm-hmm. Stanton is $29 million a year. He's got another, I think, 5 or 6 years left as well. They've got to pay Aaron Judge, who's only in the third year of arbitration, already making $17 million. And now you want to add, they just paid DJ LeMahieu, you know, I think $15 million a year. Don't quote me on that, but it was a substantial contract. And now you want to go add
6 years.
Now you want to go add Carlos Correa for $40 million a year? Like, that's...
And Freddie Freeman they're in on as well. So, I mean, the Yankees are still the Yankees. The Yankees still have big money. But if you give them more breathing room, they're going to spend that luxury tax.
Absolutely.
Which is why you need a floor. Because what's the use in constantly... You're just giving the Yankees more firepower by increasing the ceiling and not raising the floor. Because, I mean, there's no reason why the Pirates are spending only $28 million a year.
Yeah.
Small market team. But, like, can we do something about this?
The Pirates... Well, again, this goes back to the revenue constantly. Sharing. This goes back to the revenue sharing, right? As if the wealthy teams are going to be sending $30 million to each of these tiny teams like the Pirates and the Marlins and the Orioles, and then they just don't have to spend it on payroll. Mm-hmm. Right? So
let's back up here for a second. We are going to go back to the Blue Jays and what they had accomplished. Obviously, Yimi Garcia was signed. Garcia's upside is huge. I really like this signing because this is a guy, he was the closer for the Miami Marlins. He pitched incredibly well with them. He was a guy, I think, when the Blue Jays went out and got Simber, they were inquiring about, and the Marlins just weren't prepared to let go of him yet. And then, of course, they moved him at the trade deadline to the Astros. This is a guy, he mixes his pitches really well. He has a very good fastball. He averages 96 miles an hour. He touches 99 with that thing. He averages about 47% of his pitches are fastballs, 28% are going to be his slider, and it's a hard slider. He throws that around 91, 92. He's got a curveball. He's got a changeup that he mixes in there well. So this is a guy that I think that Pete Walker identified as a guy who could be a high-leverage dude in the back end of this Blue Jays bullpen. I know one of the biggest struggles Garcia had last year when he was moved to the Astros is he didn't really have a role in that bullpen. He went from being the guy in the Marlins bullpen to being one of the guys that was acquired by the Astros on top of Kendall Graveman. They already had Presley back there. So they all of a sudden were using him in a role he wasn't used to, and he didn't do as well. Now the Jays are a bullpen by committee type of team, so we'll see how that fits in. However, I think we will watch Romano slide into that closer role more permanently, or at least the highest leverage position, maybe not necessarily the ninth. But, and I think Garcia is going to slot in right after him. He'll kind of be, you know, that high-end dude.
Well, I mean, the comparison to Simber is a great one because every Jays fan that watched baseball last year fell in love with Simber, right?
Yeah.
So if you're telling me Yimi Garcia is a better bullpen piece than Simber, that's reason enough to be excited, right?
Exactly. 100%. So what do the Jays need to do still? Well, they still have a hole in the infield, obviously, and this is all stuff that's on hold.
Nothing they can do. The hole left behind by the departure of Breivik Valera, right?
Right, that's right. That hole? Okay. How do we fill the hole of Valera? I do think the Blue Jays are going to make another move to get a left-handed pitcher in this starting rotation. We'll see how that plays out. Right now, Ryu is the only lefty they have. They went from Mats and Ray and Ryu and being left-handed heavy to all of a sudden being a right-handed heavy starting rotation.
Here's a question for you when it comes to acquiring pitching. Where does the CBA officially affect the ability for these clubs to negotiate trades? I know, like, as far as free agency goes, officially there can't be any discussion with free agents, right? But well, it'd be naive to think that that's like not happening, right? There's got to be some, like,
so technically teams are allowed to discuss the framework for deals.
Okay. Which means
they are not allowed. It's a gray area, man.
So they can just negotiate the, okay, let's call it the framework. Every detail of a trade, they just can't put the blue ink on the page yet.
They can't sign the ink.
Okay.
Which is interesting because you make a deal, the framework of a deal, and then you let it sit.
And then deals fall apart
all the time, right?
Are we sure that was a good deal? Yeah.
So this is one of those things where I think once the CBA is renegotiated, we are going to see just complete chaos. Deals being made.
Right.
Signings happen overnight. Guys that were expected to go one place all of a sudden go another. It's going to be really interesting. But in the meantime, it's the dark days.
Well, because here's how it goes, right? It's a guy like Carlos Correa has a deal in place with the San Francisco Giants unofficially. Here's how much money it's for. CBA gets signed. And then in that like 24-hour window, the Mets realize, oh, the luxury tax went up. Here's what the offer is for Correa. Let's go tack an extra $2 million a year on it and bring him this way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, no, man.
This is the truth, right? The luxury tax goes up. There's a framework in line for, let's say, Correa to the Giants, and all of a sudden the Yankees are like, you know what? Let's go 450. $450 million. We can do this now. So should be interesting to see how it goes. So who's left? Who's still standing when it comes to big names to be signed? We just mentioned Carlos Correa. Trevor Story's still out there. Chris Bryant's still out there. A lot of the high-end pitching has been swooped up. We watched Scherzer sign, Verlander, Gausman, Ray. Trade is going to be interesting. The trade market is going to be where we're going to see some of these high-end pitchers moved. Guys like Luis Castillo, Frankie Montes, you know, guys on teams where they're in retool mode. I know the A's are in retool mode every third year, so there's definitely going to be some starting pitching available there. The Miami Marlins, for whatever crazy reason, are the deepest team in all of baseball when it comes to starting pitching,
yeah.
And they've got holes elsewhere, so you could see them move somebody to fill in their outfield or wherever they may be looking. I don't know, man, if that luxury tax rises, it's going to be a free-for-all, I think.
So players want the luxury tax to go up. Owners don't. Right? What's owners the don't. Like the incentive for the owners? Because this is where I always kind of get confused. Owners want the luxury tax as a like self-imposed restriction to help them stay a little bit fiscally responsible, right? Prevents guys like the Yankees from just spending $500 million on salary.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the teams that it's keeping in check at the top are also the ones who probably would like to get rid of it altogether. I just don't know who really wants the luxury tax. Is it just those middle pack teams like the Blue Jays and the Cardinals?
I mean, the luxury tax going up is basically only benefiting the top-end teams that are there right now. Like, the Jays have never spent to the luxury tax. So if the luxury tax goes up, is Rodgers going to be like, yes, now we will spend more? I don't know.
That's what I mean. Like, it helps these guys stay competitive with the very tippy-top guys like the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers. Right?
If their management and their ownership is prepared to spend more, right? So like these middling teams, like the Cardinals is a great example. Even teams like the Mariners is a good example, right? A fairly major market team on the West Coast,
yeah.
But they've never spent to the luxury tax. Like if the luxury tax goes up, is the Mariners all of a sudden is their ownership going to be like, you know?
Okay,
what,
sorry. Let me reframe my question. I don't mean who does. Who benefits from increasing the... I just mean the existence of it at all. Like, if we had a new CBA with no luxury tax anymore, it was just a free-for-all. The teams that are spending $140 million on their payroll right now, like the Blue Jays, are probably not going to spend any more, right?
Exactly.
So but it's, those it's top teams...
The Dodgers and the
Those
Yankees,
top three exactly. are the only teams that benefit.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is the first... This is the first work stoppage in 26 years in baseball. First lockout in 30 years. Just a reminder to everyone that a lockout doesn't happen without the owners locking out the players. This isn't a strike. This isn't a work stoppage on the union side. This is meant to light a fire under the MLBPA's butt to get back to the negotiating table and make some concessions, and we'll see if it works. I mean, we all watched Manfred be the mouthpiece of the owners yesterday and talk about how they only wish the best for baseball. Does anyone actually believe Rob Manfred when he gets up there and he's like, we're doing this for the betterment of the fans? It's like, oh, fuck off. Come on.
Is there a money-saving component to this where by locking the players out, the owners are saving on, like, physical therapists and just being able to, like, shut the lights off on the workout rooms?
That is one thing that they are doing. The players are no longer allowed to work out in their facilities. They no longer have access to the staff and their mental performance staff. They no longer are allowed to... I mean, organizations have been told not to even mention players by names. In fact, if you look at every team's MLB website, they have literally removed the faces of the players. And the players have kind of done a little bit of a kickback, and they've taken those avatars and they've put them as all their faces on social media. So if you go on Twitter, all the players have their new profile pic is the, which if you think about the amount of money that was spent on programming for the MLB to do that, is what makes me think the last couple meetings where they couldn't make progress was all hearsay. You're not going to spend that much money on programmers redoing all of these sites.
Do you think it really costs that much in programmers? I'm not an expert, so I'm not like... it also feels like that could just be like one... They hit Control F and it just reverts back.
I know nothing about it. I'm just guessing.
Maybe someone who watches this can clarify if they're a good programmer. In which case, if you are a good programmer watching this, help us with our timestamps. It is kind of spooky though, going to these websites and like everything just looks like stock images of baseball field or an empty ball glove. It's just like there's no images of these players at all. No highlights from last year or anything right now.
This is super interesting. So the last time there was a lockout was 1990. These are the players and that were making the most money at the time at every position. So in left field, the highest paid guy was Ricky Henderson, and he was making $2.2 million. Kirby Puckett was the highest paid center fielder. He was making $2.7 million. Robin Yount was making $3.2 million in right field. Lou Whitaker, $1.8 million for second base. Like, man, it's just so crazy to me. The highest paid pitcher was Roger Clemens at $2.6 million. This is where baseball was at 31 years ago.
That's crazy.
Highest paid pitcher now, Max Scherzer at $45 million a year.
He's done all right for himself.
Let's talk Marcus Stroman quickly here. And then if you've got anything to add at the end, buddy, feel free to do so. Marcus Stroman doubling as a journalist in the last few days, breaking his own signing
online. Kind of a Spider-Man technique, eh?
Right.
Getting pictures of himself and sending it to the Daily Bugle. Look, I just signed. Oh. Sorry. I'm such a child.
I love it. Yeah. Marcus Stroman goes online on Twitter and announces that he's going to the Cubs. He actually signed a decent deal there. I think it's average of $23 million a year over 3 years. So he's getting paid probably less than everyone expected, but he's a bit of a mouthpiece. So maybe that brought his value down a little bit. However, kind of cool. I you know what? Sometimes Marcus Stroman comes across as arrogant. And it can rub me the wrong way and rub people the wrong way. However, I thought it was very cool to watch him break this news, you know?
Yeah.
Take it out of the hand of the sports journalists and just, it was funny to watch like John Heyman and Jeff Passan be like, Marcus Stroman to the Cubs per Marcus Stroman.
That was cool.
Yeah. All right, brother, anything to add here?
I just want to quickly mention, we were supposed to be interviewing Blue Jays prospect Hagen Danner yesterday.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I did have some family stuff that I had to deal with, so we had to push it back, I think, to next week. But we do have a post up on our community tab on our YouTube page where we are taking your questions, comments, stuff like that. So we do have about a half a dozen already submitted, and there's some pretty good ones in there. But if you haven't already and you got a good, interesting question for Hagen, then click it on there or send it to Scott or I on Twitter and Instagram. And there's still time to get your questions in, I guess, is the point of that long story.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are unaware of who Hagen Danner is, that is completely acceptable. He was a pitcher with the Vancouver Canadiens high A team. But what's really interesting about him is he was added to the 40-man roster. He throws 100 miles an hour. It was originally drafted in 2017 as a catcher. Mm-hmm. Played 3 years in the Blue Jays organization as a catcher. The pandemic hit. He was struggling with his offense, was encouraged to give pitching a go because he still had a cannon of an arm. All of a sudden, he's on this 40-man roster. Really cool story. Cool. Anyways, Hagen Danner, we will be talking to him next week. And like Adam said, feel free to get your questions and comments in about that on our Discord. There will be a link on the YouTube here for you to join that for free.
I just picture him as being like a converted catcher to pitcher, having his delivery where he's like just like starting in like a catcher squat, and then he like pops up and throws. Anyways. All right, man. Good talking with you.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, everybody who has clicked and viewed and shared or commented. Just your participation in this community is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much, everybody. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast, and on our TikTok. Have a great day, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to The Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.